Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of Know Your Beater. It's been a little while and we changed up the format a little bit for today because we don't have travel restrictions anymore. So we have today we have our friend Brett from Heart and Soil Seeds sitting in here live in the studio with me. And Brett is a local Denver guy. You'll see him at any kind of cannabis related event in Denver. That's where I've kind of hung out with him a bunch. And I know that you are part of or hang out with the GrowCast crew.
Yep.
So shout out to those guys. And also Adam Dunn. So I love all these guys. We hang out a lot. We try to come down to Denver a lot. And everybody's got great, cool vibes and fun things like jars of weed and packs of seeds and cuts and all sorts of stuff. So welcome to the show, Brett. Yeah, say hello.
I appreciate you having me on. It's been cool connecting with you. Now, like I said, I heard about you guys, mainly through Tops, in his personal experience, and he just told me, all about the good vibes you guys are putting out there. And I kind of, I already knew about your show, of course, but I'm not a big podcast guy, but I started diving into some of you guys, some of the things you guys were talking about, and you guys and GrowCast have a lot of the same, ideas and missions, trying to link the community together, support the small time grower, education, a lot of lift as you rise, as you kind of go up, if you bring people with you, we all kind of, end up in a better place, So that's what I'm all about, is connecting with the community. Like I said, that's how I met Tops and you, was through the GrowCast event and then the Adam Dunn,
Farmers Markets.
Farmers
man.
Markets.
Can't wait till
those
do
cool
that
farmers markets, man. Those are so awesome. And you get to see who's like real parts of the community when you like, oh yeah, I've seen your face 15 times at different events and different scenarios. And it's always good vibes, like you said. So I'm happy that we're able to link up and get me on the show.
I agree with you. I think that we live in sort of a hot spot for cannabis.
Oh yeah.
Front Range, or let's just say this side of the divide, although everywhere, but just let's say within a reasonable driving distance to Denver, there are so many people who are just really into it. And, a lot of them are just, potheads.
Well, they're coming out of the woodwork, it's like Colorado's always been like that, but now with like legalization all over the place, in different states and people are just, and then CBD becoming more and more widely used. I'm having people, 60, 70 kind of coming out of the woodwork, like, oh yeah, I always thought this was like a bad thing, but now it's like helping me sleep and helping, teach me how to grow. Like, what are the best strains for this? And it's really fun to like be able to connect with like parts of the community that maybe felt ostracized from like the cool culture of cannabis. Right.
Yeah.
And now it's like more mainstream and like more people are coming up to the booth and like we're educating like everybody, it's really fun. It's not just like the, middle age or younger kids anymore. It's like, it's everybody. And that's the best way to have it. Cause you get more input, you get more basically funding and support for the projects, and the whole movement. So I've just in the last year, I've really kind of dived into that community of like doing the farmers markets and like doing more podcasts. And it's like, the more people you connect with, the more you realize like this isn't
they're out there
abnormal. This is more normal than people give it credit for.
It's very accepted. Yeah. So true story. When we went to, we went to the GrowCast, the class with Jordan and Queen of the Sun Grown.
Yep.
Shout out.
I think it's maybe where I met you the first time.
I think it was. So true story. So remember we took a break and we like hopped out for lunch.
Yep.
So right around the corner from there, we were pulled up to a stop sign or a stoplight. Sorry. And we had to wait. And the dude next to us is this guy. And this guy was not at the class. It was just like a middle-aged guy. And he's in his car by himself. And right at the stoplight, he whips out his bowl and he starts hitting it. And we look over so I roll down the window. I'm like, hey, man, what are you smoking? And he's like, oh, I just harvested. It's my own. This guy was like that. He had the biggest grin on his face. And so for me, that was kind of like, man, it's just everywhere.
Yeah.
And everybody's cool with it around town. And so, all these events and stuff finally bringing people together. Mm-hmm. And so, by the way, did you see Cup?
Yes.
It'll be happening again, June 3rd. Same
hopefully
place.
I'll be able to get in on this one.
Yeah, exactly. But anyways, more of those events are kind of happening. So I know that you're involved in a lot of them. And so hopefully, you know, when the weather gets a little bit warmer, those are all going to kick back up again.
Well, yeah, we rarely say no to an invite. You know, we try to be as many places as we can. You know, a lot of times in my family life, it's not, you know, feasible to do all of them.
Yeah.
But the more that I've, I put myself out there, I mean, the more, you know, the more receptive the community is, and I get to meet more and more like different niches of the community that I didn't really know existed, or they didn't know I existed, or vice versa. So like getting out in real life is like been one of the best, you know, things for me.
For sure.
Especially after COVID, it's like, I was itching to get back in connection with
real
people again.
Yeah. So you were saying earlier that you and I didn't know this until today, but you were saying how you used to run a pretty large grow at Kind Love.
So at Kind Love, I was a assistant manager for the most of the time there. I managed another facility called Cross Genetics. It was another large, about 50,000 square foot facility with the Dosatrons and things like that.
In Denver. In this area,
pretty much. So I worked in the R&D department for Kind Love for a while, and then they built what they call the Big Show, the big facility, and I helped move plants over, helped propagate basically everything from beginning to end. That's where I learned a lot about production, you know.
And how did you get into that?
So whenever I landed in Colorado, I moved here to grow cannabis for a living.
Where are you from, man?
I'm from Texas.
Texas.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So I had a couple run-ins, went to jail a couple of times, and it was like, when I graduated from college, I don't want to end up here because I'm not stopping smoking weed. I don't want to have to deal with this for the rest of my life. So, my girlfriend at the time, now wife, we just packed up all of our stuff in a tiny little U-Haul with like $2,000 to our name and just shot out here. And with a hope and a dream, I started growing like the second week we got here. Back when they were like selling like big plants at the dispensaries, you could just buy a plant, get like a tent, buy a plant, fucking press play, and let's go. And that's how I started in my room there in my closet, in the tent. And then and I was trying to get a professional grow job all that time, but it took some time. I was doing, I did roofing, I did kitchen and countertop sales, I did all kinds of stuff to kind of security work. I did a lot of that stuff to kind of put myself through while I was trying to get this a grow job. And then they gave me a shot at Kind Love with no experience, and kind of worked my way up from the very bottom, literally mopping floors and doing everything that a grunt does, and worked my way up to assistant manager. And at that point, the guys from OxyClean bought out, Kind Love. I don't know if you know that story.
I won't
tap into that too much. It's not even that relevant, but they did a lot of in-house cleaning changes, and people left. And so that's when I ended up leaving and got out of the industry, the commercial industry. And I was, at the time, I was doing a lot of testing for Greenpoint Seeds, testing their seeds. And I got in with the owner there and worked into a grow job there, breeding for them, growing their plants, making their seeds, packaging their seeds, shipping all their seeds out. So I got to see the inside of like how a seed company works, and like learned a lot about breeding. That ended up kind of fracturing relationship wise, and went and did other projects on my own. That's kind of around that same time as when I went to Peru. But then I worked at Cross Genetics, which is another company that does salt grows, and worked with the Dosatrons and hundreds of plants per room. And it started off, they had a big issue with their clones. They didn't have them properly labeled, and they had 300 different varieties. They weren't confirmed about everything. So they knew my genetic, not expertise, but knowledge, experience.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not an expert, but the going through and like actually doing pheno hunts of clones, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Making sure the clones are what they say they are.
Yeah, yeah.
And we got culled a lot of things, and I learned a lot of things there. But I just got disheartened with the industry, you know, like the big box industry of cannabis. And I was like, you know, like, it, all the while I was kind of breeding on my own, and I ended up going back and working for Greenpoint for a little bit longer outside the garden, just doing their seeds, just doing their selling or shipping of seeds. And all that time I was building my own business and doing my own breeding, until I was able to kind of break off and do my own thing and never look back.
That's great, man. Because I have, over the years, and I still do get a lot of questions from people on the show, from other places, and they're like, oh, hey, I'm thinking about moving out to Colorado, and, you know, how do I, and I know I want to do something in cannabis, like, what do I do? And the best advice I can give them is to, you know, if you can be here and, you know, like, make some friends, that's going to be your best shot to getting in somewhere, really.
Yeah, and just connect with as many people as possible. You know, I have a Discord now, and like a lot of people are connecting on the Discord now, you know, between all the different Discords, or just the Heart and Soil Discord, finding like-minded people, whether that's in person, online, and just, and collaborating any way you can, like whether that's trading seeds or whatever. And then, you know, what I always said is just like, do what you say you're going to do, and just be a man of integrity, woman of integrity, and just do what you're supposed to do, and you'll draw the right people to you, and then you'll continue to work with those people. And then the people that things maybe don't work off out with, just let them go.
Yeah.
You know, because there's a lot of that in the industry. It's like, that's what I was warning people about. It's like, if you have a passion, follow that passion, but here's a few things to be wary about, or just like, you know, but the key is just be genuine and go out and do stuff. Cause if you wait, you're going to be behind.
Yeah.
You know, if you just, you know, so go out and get a trim job, go
it's
out.
It's not going to walk into your lap.
It's not going to walk into your lap. Yeah. Everyone wants to do it. When I first got here, it was less people. But now there's, you know, a lot of companies have came, saw, failed, and they're gone, and they'll never be back again. You know, since I've kind of been through the ringer, there's been a lot of those companies that, you know, people in general just get tired, or like, you know, this, you know, working $10 an hour, you know, doing hard manual labor, it's not for everybody. You know, you really have to love
it. Not as glorious as
it's not, you know, there's a lot of janitorial type work and like grunt type work, you know, even at the top, you know, even when I was managing the facilities, still got to get the work done. Plants don't care, you know, if it's a Christmas or New Year's or whatever.
As much as we don't like to believe it, there is a lot of unskilled labor that happens for growing like that. Oh, and that's just the way it is.
Just the way it is. And, but yeah, I, like you said, like, you know, connect with people is the main thing, I think.
Yeah. So, you have quite the, just the history of doing stuff, and you got tired of the industry and kind of went out to do your own thing. So I'm aware of two things. So you can kind of fill me in. Yeah. One is I, you know, you mentioned breeding, and the other is I know that you have, you're into like the fermented plants feeding plants kind of stuff. So, we should talk a little bit about that, but before, real quick, just because I don't want to sit here any longer with these jars in front of me without me opening them.
Yes,
so,
I agree.
So you brought a couple things up to share.
And I got more in here. We'll talk about maybe those later. But these are like the ones I just pulled out first.
Okay, so, and I already smelled this one, but this is...
That's Afghan Punch.
Yeah, all right. So Afghan Punch, and then this is going to lead back to the Peru, right?
Yep.
So okay, so because I want to hear more about Peru. So let's talk about this. This has a, I don't know, like you said... anisey kind of smells like ouzo.
Like when we smoke it, like think, like almost like Jägermeister. Like
yeah.
Almost like,
whatever those herbs are in there.
A mix of herbs maybe, but like, it's got like almost like a medicinal, like syrupy quality.
They're like danker herbs though. They're not like bright, fresh herbs.
Right.
They're danker kind of herbs.
Yep.
And there's definitely some kind of like sour funk going on there too.
Yeah.
So tell me again, this is Afghan Punch, but what's where does it come from?
So Afghan Punch is Peruvian punch across the Afghan Hindu Kush. And the Peruvian punch I got from Peru when I went to hike the Inca Trail, and I was in Cusco. I was gifted a bag of cannabis by some locals, and found some seeds in it and brought them back. And at the time I was working at Kind Love and some of these other places. I had a really strong connection with the breeders and different growers around, and had a connection to a lot of different cuts. So I took, Mac One, Alien Rock Cane, a bunch of these different strains that I was
a library
hunting and finding. And one of them was Mindo Breath Purple Punch. And that one was a real standout. And in the testing phase, whenever we did the testers for the, it was the Peruvian Punch, or the, Mendo Breath Purple Punch across the Peruvian Heirloom, took that, did a bunch of testing on it, found a couple awesome phenos. One of them was from a tester, and it was the Purple Nancy cut. Real just dense, like a 60-day finisher, all from this, you know, it had the Peruvian
highland, lowland. Where did it come from?
So Peru is an interesting place because, you know, if you know anything about agriculture in Peru,
potatoes.
It's potatoes.
We have lots of different kinds of potatoes.
So you know a little bit about agriculture in Peru. So potatoes and corn.
Yeah.
So they have the most varieties. If you look at, you know, you can look at Peruvian potatoes, Peruvian corn.
Yeah.
It's just the multitude of different strains, you know, and different varieties. And they did a lot of agricultural science with step farming, you know. And so they have a lot of different agricultural test sites where they were testing altitude and what grew best at different altitudes and different varieties based on the certain regions.
Yep.
Cannabis was a crop just like a lot of these other things, and they grew it, and it was traded, and there were seeds that went all over the place. So Peru is an interesting place for cannabis because there's a lot of development.
Why am I so out of the loop? Like, I've never see anybody growing Peruvian.
So and Peruvian genetics in general, I don't think I've never really heard of them. But in terms of just agriculture in general, I would say that there's almost no doubt in my mind that they grew cannabis.
Yeah,
in that,
they must have if you got seeds.
Exactly. I mean, in that region, and they had a lot of different varieties. So typically sativas, obviously, you know, really thin leaves,
yeah,
really a long flowering cycle. So these varieties had the thin leaves, were missing, you know, like you got like the fingers and you got like the toes, what I like to call it, right? You got the fingers and the toes of a leaf. It didn't have the toes. There's no toes on these plants.
Okay.
Whenever I pop, you know, so it was kind of like if you've ever grown like some of these ties, like Landrace Highland ties, they like the leaves look a little different, you know, like four rather than five or six, and they don't have any thumbs on them.
Gotcha.
It looked a lot like sativa, but really interesting sativa, but it finished much faster than like true sativas. So like I have Malawi and Mozambique strains, they take 13 to 16 weeks. This finished in closer to 12.
Because it's like equatorial, but high altitude.
And I'm not exactly sure where they could have been from Cusco. They could have been from another region. All I know is I got them in Peru.
Yeah.
And, you know, the seeds that I did pop were pretty similar. So, you know, it seemed to be from the same variety.
So how did you stumble into that, like in Peru?
So I was at one of the, in Cusco, at one of the, like the sites that like, they have a bunch of like archaeological or like, you know, Peruvian or like Mayan sites.
Yeah.
You know, and just people walking around, hanging out, kind of like the park, you know, I just smelled cannabis.
Okay.
And I walked over, it was like off to the side. There's these three guys and they like put it away. And I'm like, no, está bien, está bien. And I was like, mota? Because I didn't know anything else. It's like, mota? And they're like, sí, mota, Cusco. From Cusco, like they were like showing me this is from here.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, I have some money. And they're like, no. And they just gave it to me. And they said, you know.
So they weren't like dealers.
No. They were just
some dudes.
Some dudes about my age,
dudes
smoking
burning
some weed.
One, burning
and they,
one.
And I had a beard at the time. And they're like, oh, this guy's cool. He's an American with a beard.
That's
he's
such
fine.
A cool story.
Yeah.
Man.
So it was pretty cool. And I hooked up some other people, some other travelers, and they, you know, had some stuff that they had gotten from Peru as well.
Yeah.
So that, you know, there were some other, you know, it was that bag plus another bag. And then there were some seeds at the end, and I was, you know, like, hey, and I had been dabbling in breeding
with
Greenpoint at the time. I'm like,
hey, I'll pop
this up. Could be interesting, you know? And I was like, so I set out on that Peruvian project.
So is that, that smell, is that characteristic of the Peruvian?
So that the sweetness is, but the more deep musty flavors are from that Afghan.
Okay. So, are you familiar with licorice root?
Yeah. So that's what it smells like, right? Licorice root,
not anise, licorice root.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I only know that because, they put it in a lot of tea and 100 or so years ago, it was like one of the sweetest things around.
And it's great for, and one reason I know about it, it's great for teething babies.
Is it really?
Yeah, yeah. So okay. It's like licorice root, like
teeters. The chew one?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense.
Like the taste of it, but it's really soft. So
fibrous.
Yeah, yeah. It's nice and soft, so it's not going to take out big chunks of it, but it's not soft enough, so it's going to hurt
their throat. Man, you're totally right. That's what that smell is.
And I didn't think about it. I thought what I was thinking was Jägermeister, but that's the licorice root is not, it's a little more subtle, right?
Absolutely. And then you definitely get like that sour funk that I was saying before, and that's from the Afghan.
Yep.
And by the way, I just smoked a little bit of it, and it has a really delicious like after flavor.
Yep.
That's kind of like menthol-y? Sweet and smooth. Yeah. It's I don't know if that's the licorice root. It's gotta be. Yeah. But it's dude, it's tasty. It didn't taste like what I thought it was gonna taste like, but it's delicious.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's really nice. I smoked a bunch of it last night. It was nice and sedative. So don't smoke too much.
Okay, all right.
The day.
I'm gonna cover that up. All right.
We do have the Silk Road skunk that I was doing a big skunk hunt, and I hunted a bunch of stuff that said skunk on the package, you know?
Yeah.
And yes.
So you did send me a list.
I did.
And
that's probably
and I did read through it. Like I said, I was overwhelmed, but I did read through it a few times. And I noticed that you had a whole bunch of skunks on there, which were all moms.
Yes. Right?
And I did want to ask you about those because I don't know. I see various things, and I'll just really quick give you kind of my perspective on skunk.
Yep.
To me, by the way, I could be totally wrong, so please correct me. But my understanding is there isn't a specific roadkill skunk plant. It is a set of terps, I guess is the best way I can explain it. But it's not like it's a cut that went around and it disappeared.
Correct.
My
understanding as well. It's like it's a nostalgic terpene. Right.
There
it's
you
like,
go. It's a nostalgic, I like that.
Nostalgic terpene. That, and you know,
I'm a nostalgic terpene hunter.
A lot of, yeah. And a lot, it's one of those things because memory is interesting and smell and taste are interesting because they connected to memory so strong. You want them to be as good as you remember.
Yeah.
So some people, not everybody, but may have imagined. Wow, it smelled like a dead skunk.
Yeah.
It smelled like a dead skunk. But if we were to put it next to things today, it's like, no, it smelled like Kim D something. You know, I mean, but there's different palates and people smell things differently. Yep. But people would like generalize skunk as like, I mean, the old folks would be like, oh, it smells like a dead skunk on the side of the road. And it's like, that's what weed used to smell like.
Yeah.
It's like a bunch of weed like that.
So I have two things on that. One is the skunk. The roadkill skunk it's from essentially the same plants as the like sweet skunks that you would like skunk one, right? It's essentially the same cultivar. It's just different expressions of terpenes.
So it's funny you say that. I mean, because like the skunk one, for example, you know, there's a whole discussion around the skunk one, like, you know, pre-Sam, you know, this, you know, skunk man.
I love the pre tag,
you know, like, but, right. Like whoever, like there's
it's always
you know,
pre this.
Well, it's like, it's like whoever, you know, decided that, you know, there's different versions of the skunk one. When I grew the skunk one, I grew the skunk three different versions. One was an earlier one. One was a femme. And one was one that I bought like weeks before I popped it, very recently.
Yeah.
And they all had like very hazy qualities. Like, not like I would think of like skunk, like what I would think of a skunk, which some people have also hunted for, like the Uncle Fester skunk, is like Afghan crossed with like Mexican or Thai, like those combinations.
Completely unrelated genetics.
Yeah. Like, you know, like kind of a hodgepodge. But the ones that I've seen or heard of, they always had something to do with like the Afghan typically.
Yeah.
Or like some sort of the Kandahar, somewhere from like that region of the world.
Yeah.
And everyone's got their take on it, right? So, but my favorite terpene probably is like lavender, grape, gas. Like that's probably like, okay. I like a lot of different stuff, but like skunk isn't this, I like it, but it's not like, oh, I have to have that.
Yeah.
But when people were like, oh, the skunk is gone. I'm one of those guys. That's like, if you know, you can't have it. You can't do this. It's impossible. It's gone forever.
Yeah.
Don't even bother looking. Like I'm looking now. I have to look.
It's
like a challenge.
Yeah.
Like it's a challenge for me. It's something like this combination, something different.
You might like it.
And I did. Yeah. And I found a ton of winners that I really did like, but I didn't find even that one that says RKS, Roadkill Skunk,
yeah,
from Blue Sky Vienna. That one isn't skunky. But I kept it in there because of the, it checks all the other boxes. You know, just because it doesn't mean it's not a good plant, because it's not, doesn't mean it's not a good plant just because it doesn't smell like skunk. But we are still hunting those skunk terps. And like a lot of the skunk that was in there that you saw the list, you know, some of it's very skunky or like raunchy, or like some have described as like trash can juices or like puke, you know, things like that. People like that stuff.
That doesn't resonate so much for me with skunk. Are you familiar with the smell of skunk cabbage? Like it's a plant called skunk
cabbage. I know the plant, but I've never smelled it. So
to me, that's how I remember it, is like, that's what it smelled like. And it's kind of like sweet, but then at the same time, like kind of sour.
Yeah.
And kind of at the same time, like you don't really want to smell it.
But then you go back.
But then you got it. Yeah.
It's like, you know, like it's like the rubber cement, Sharpie, gasoline.
Yeah.
That kind of feeling. It's like, oh,
I don't associate that with roadkill.
No.
Personally.
I don't either. And I can't say that I've necessarily smelled what people are describing as the roadkill skunk.
So what did you find in all of those crosses with those very, I mean, there's got to be six of them on there.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, some of them were more on the sweet side. You know, some of them were more on the, you know, GMO side. Some of them were really unique, like one of them was the boss skunk.
Yeah.
It was like, smelled like somebody puked in the dumpster. Like, you know,
and like
it's
offensive.
Like, but it's like sweet. You know that sweetness that hits you?
Yeah.
And it's like,
do you remember the pink powder?
Like, first, why does it smell sweet? You're like, oh.
Did they use that pink powder when you went to like elementary school? Like, if somebody
puked to like in clean the hallway, up, yeah.
And they sprinkle that powder on it.
It's like,
that's
like,
what I
it like. Smells good at first and then nasty.
It smells like crushed up, like sweet tarts or something. And then it just gets nasty.
Yeah. But yeah, so that was one of them. Like the Bigfoot stick, for example, was like raunchy, musty, you know, Fumunda cheese is kind of how like Shane likes to talk about it, but it wasn't, and it had a lot of good qualities, like, you know, big chunky buds that smoke really great, you know, and like things like, you know, that the plant's great, but it wasn't, you know, that super skunk that we're looking for. So hopefully combining some of those attributes, you know, with, you know, some of these other, you know, males and things like that, we're going to keep hunting for the skunks. But
you feel like it still needs a little bit more gene mixing?
To find
that?
Yeah. And a lot of, you know, it's like, you know, sometimes you look, you're hunting, you know, for this thing over here, but you find these 10 other things along the way that are fantastic. Well, like, it's like, we still win, you know, even though you don't necessarily find this thing. It's like, you got all these other winners too. And it, you know, a lot of them are just like old school terps that I really like, or like combining, you know, like the Gorilla Glue No. 4 with like the, you know, Zeta Sage and 82 Skunk. That's the project that we're working on now.
Yeah. What is that? So we started talking about your list.
I
made a comment about, there was all the females. What is the, we didn't say anything about the male.
So the male is from, I got it from Adam Dunn, Sage Master Select. I met him out at Area 420 for the first time. They're doing the San Luis Valley Seed Exchange, and he was there and I was there.
We traded some seeds.
And I was during the time I was doing the skunk hunt, and he had this Zeta Sage 82 skunk that, you know, that he's remembered to be real. The male, especially using that cross, was real skunky. And like the 82 skunk that they use was from Kentucky, apparently.
Okay.
Unrelated to Skunk One or anything from Amsterdam. It was like, of Afghan, you know, probably mixed with Afghan, Thai, Colombian, some of these other ones, kind of like a hodgepodge of whatever they had at the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd started hunting, I included it in the skunk hunt, and a lot of what I choose, you know, things on is like, if they're not vigorous, they don't grow well, if they're lanky or they're runty, they get killed.
You know?
And this one just kept pushing through and like kept outshining everything, and like
wouldn't die.
And like the, you know, during the clone stage, like it cloned really well. The flower was great smoke, real chunky buds and like more like that old school smell, like that, you know, like the Zeta Sage, you know, I liken it to like the, like a eucalyptus smells, you know, kind of like that, you know, like piney.
Yeah.
And then the 82 Skunk, which I've never had before. They were just, you know, describing to me as funky, you know, super funky and skunky. You know, it's like kind of the only way that they could describe it. Well, so, yeah.
Is Zeta Sage, so Sage is Dunn's
sativa Afghan genetic equilibrium.
Yeah. And so what is the Zeta? Is that just
Zeta? It's the Sage cross to OG Kush. Afghan OG Kush.
Okay, gotcha.
So,
Well, that sounds interesting. And yeah. So you ran a bunch of those?
So I ran a bunch of those and found two really killer pheno females and a badass male.
Yeah.
And I had a bunch of the skunk hunt that was in there, plus a bunch of stuff that we've been hunting and selecting and running multiple times from our own selections. We had a bunch of good stuff in the room, you know, GMO cross, the Gorilla Glue. What was another one that was... Black Lime Reserve that was really go really well with the skunk terps. A lot of things that just would go really well or complement. And we end up with a bunch of crosses because
to answer your original question of which one I'd be interested in, that Black Lime Reserve one is probably the
answer. Yep. So I got you. All right. That was one of the first ones. Everyone jumped on that.
And then what else? Do you have stuff with the Peruvian?
So we got a lot of different stuff. So we have.
This is strong, by the way.
Strong.
Yeah. It's strong. I can definitely tell.
It's strong. Yeah. Yeah. And so that's the Afghan Punch. We have the Afghan Punch F2s. We have a whole Afghan Punch line.
Okay.
We have the Peruvian Punch is in a couple of different things, including the Taste the Rainbow line.
Okay.
Is Mandarin Skittles. Across the Peruvian Punch.
Okay.
So that the whole Taste the Rainbow line has a lot of stuff was built upon from the Peruvian Punch because I really like those.
So Peruvian terms. Punch is the original.
Yes.
Okay, Peruvian gotcha. Punch, and then this is crossed with an Afghan.
Correct.
What's this Afghan?
So the Afghan was brought back by a U.S. service member. I got like 50 seeds from them about 4 years ago and started working those lines. And
that's so crazy.
F1s. And so I have the F2s and we have BX. We have a whole Afghan project. So if you're interested in like we have the F2s that three versions of the F2s, five versions of the BXs.
Yeah.
That one of them includes the Peruvian Punch. It was like Peruvian Punch, Afghan, crossed back to Afghan. Trying to really solidify, you know, a lot of the Afghan genetics, but bring something new to the table too.
One thing I am fascinated by, and maybe I haven't looked hard enough, but just having a better understanding of it, and this is just because it's getting more and more, the knowledge is getting out there, but sort of like the Afghan regional kind of stuff. So, and the reason that I'm interested in that is because, first of all, just about anything with Afghan just has the power that you just don't really find in a lot of other places.
The strength. You see, like the actual thing?
As far as like just medicinal kind of stuff, it's just got the power.
It does, yeah.
And then there are a wide range of terps for sure. And one of them that I don't know if you've heard me talk about on the show, but I have this Snoop Dogg that I got from a pack from JJ. And it has like very like fresh herb, like men's cologne kind of terps.
Yeah.
And I think it was talking with Duke and as I was describing those, he made a comment about those being like the Highland Afghan kind of terps, or that comes from a Highland.
I would agree with that.
And so I love that profile. And so I don't know, just always interested in learning more about it's kind of like the regions of Afghanistan and what specifically.
And these are the Hindu Kush. It was from the Hindu Kush region, the Afghan Hindu Kush region. And other than that description, we weren't given like exact coordinates or anything like that. But I'm also interested because I get questions all the time. You know, what valley was this from? And a lot of times it's like these guys are just grabbing seeds and trying not to get caught. It's like this guy was U.S. service member doing patrols like. Didn't necessarily want to give up like where they were stationed and like things like that.
Totally,
so like it was very vague, the amount of information I got. But there were, and it's very possible we're from different fields too. Cause the seeds that I popped, some of them varied in size,
yeah,
you know, and shape. And there were different selections. Like you said, there were some Highland selections in there that were, you know, more sativa, you know, more like a lot more longer than you would expect, like a traditional Afghan to go. But there were some that were really short and finished in, you know, 9 weeks. But there were some 13-week Afghans in there. And a lot of them were like those terpene profiles that you're describing. It's more like the bright terpene profiles rather than like the low tone, you know?
Yeah. More of the like richer, kind of danker kind of profile. So anyways, like that OGs, fascinates me.
I think a lot of OGs came from that.
Yeah. When I hear you talking about Afghan, it just, I think we're like getting farther and closer to that, having a better understanding of what comes from where.
Yeah.
Or at least just the wider range of those profiles instead of, hey, it's Afghan.
Right.
You know what I mean? I feel like it's all kind of evolving a little bit more than that now.
Yeah. And I used to smoke, you know, Afghui back in the day, and it was like lime green and like had like those bright flavors. And then you get like a lot of Afghans are like really cushy and don't have like, they were like chocolatey,
you know,
they don't have like that brightness or limited qualities to them.
So the stuff that we're, you know, the seeds that you're getting from over there, I mean, all of those plants are being grown for hash.
Most of them. Yes. Cause I was talking to somebody about that the other day, like how hash is like the beginning and the end. Like it's going to be, it's all kind of come full circle because, you know, they don't sell flour in Afghanistan a lot of times, or like a lot of these, because they don't have, you know, it's a means of transportation. You know, you got to, you know, cure this stuff. A lot of this stuff is like full of dirt. It's full of sand. You know, if you ever seen these videos of these guys harvesting the stuff, it's like, you know, it's full of sand. But like if you get a dust storm, guess where the dust goes. But if you wash the stuff or sieve the stuff, you get this beautiful hash and you can press it into literal bricks.
Yeah.
You know, so it transports better. It gets you higher quicker. It makes you more money and it's easier than selling flour. So, and the same thing at the end, you know, right now it's like, I think the hash game is like where it's at.
Do you think that they laugh at us and our obsession over flowers?
Maybe. Yeah. Like why?
One thing I will say, like all this plant matter,
right?
Well, yeah, no, but it's kind of going full circle because it seems to me like just the hash, at least around here, is just more and more popular. Like that's what people want.
Yeah.
Because it's just the purest.
Yeah. So I think I saw, you know, your hash bags in the shower here. You guys are keeping it old school too. And like, so that's some of the best hash is either washed or fresh frozen live. And that's a little bit more labor intensive, a little bit more, you know, temperamental.
You need a freeze dryer.
Yeah.
I know Scotty splurged for the freeze dryer.
I know. We're going to put some candy in there.
We don't use it nearly enough.
I'm going to put some candy in there next time I come.
Yeah. Anytime you want to like freeze dry something, man, come on up.
Okay. All right. I got some hash producers.
I live in Denver. You can carpool.
Hell yeah.
That's right. But, yeah, that does seem, you know, people want just a cleaner and cleaner.
Cleaner, yeah.
Kind of product.
And the more education, you know, and the more like these scandals that are coming up, like, you know, 1,000 pounds recalled, or like this fails testing, or like, you know, it's like, it doesn't, just because it's legal doesn't mean it's clean.
Right.
You know, and it's a lot of times the cleanest stuff comes out of gardens like yours or mine we care about the stuff. We're like, hey, look at this shit. Smoke this shit.
Yeah.
Not like trying to hide it in some like vacuum sealed bag.
Yeah. Don't look at it too close.
Don't look at it too close. Just buy it. Okay.
Oh, hey, let me borrow that loop real quick.
Yeah, exactly.
But that's so interesting because I don't know if this is the first time that I really thought about this, but it is kind of going full circle in some ways with hash like that.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating because I wonder, you know, if that is a great way for smaller producers to kind of stick around
to win. That's how you survive.
I accept the commercial cannabis.
No, industry. Me too.
It is just here. It's not going anywhere.
If it wasn't for it, we would be in danger too. So like, is the whole thing needs to survive, but we all need to be educated on the
answer. Yeah, and that's why, honestly, man, that's why it's so important, at least for me. And this is one of the things about the show, is just encouraging people to grow on their own, because not only like you're saying, there's so many reasons, but for me and you, I know we're both similar in that I love the community around it. It's a hobby in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah.
You know? And, you know, just connecting with other people that like something that you do is really cool. But in addition to that, I mean, if you don't want to play in the commercial space, man, we've got to have people you know, being able to grow their own at home.
Right.
And there's really no reason that you can't. And I'm so grateful that we live in Colorado where it's very accepted and allowed. Mm-hmm. We were cruising through some of the home grow laws of other states the other day. And man, they're just so restrictive.
They're getting
and
so it's just more, so the more stupid. They write out, the newer they are, the more restrictive they are.
Yeah. Like. And it's just, it's not good. And people need to like, that can't be, we can't end that.
Nothing is more important. We got to keep talking about it and pushing back against it.
Yeah.
Cause I mean, otherwise we're going to be, you know, our means of production is going to be taken away and you don't want to, you know, you don't want the means of production to only be in the hands of the few, you know?
Yeah. And I think the community, and I've always been kind of an indie kind of like, you know, kind of an independent kind of person and attracted to things that are sort of independent and not, you know, kind of like exist for their own good kind of naturally, put it that way. And so like the cannabis community is really cool because it's something that the community owns and controls, especially when it comes to breeding and genetics. So it's awesome that somebody who participates in the community is getting seeds from Afghanistan and Peru and making crosses and getting them out. And those are things that you're not going to find in a store.
Right.
And so to me, like, it's so important to have the community and that sort of hobby and the people who are into it continue on. And that's why I'm always pushing the events and stuff like that, because that's how those things get stronger and continue on.
Yeah.
And it's really important.
And our whole mission has always been like connect people and bring awareness and respect to where things came from, the plant,
yeah,
the people, the regions, you know,
yeah,
really give honor to, you know, the Peruvians, the Afghanis, the Malawian people, the, you know, Mozambique.
Dude, it's coming out from everywhere now. You know, that's what another thing that's amazing is that these days they're origin of genetics is just getting wider and wider and wider.
And yeah, it's like the more we learn about it, the more it's like, it's everywhere. It's been traded. And
I know that's the other thing that's hilarious is like, why are they? It's interesting how all these varieties are coming from all these places from around the world. I thought weed was bad and illegal and nobody
did it. All of a sudden it's like, yeah, we got this.
Guess what? It's everywhere.
We got some too.
Yeah. It's like food, man. It's universal.
Yeah. So yeah, we just want to, we do things, you know, a little bit different. We do everything all living soil, no-till, and we try to, you know, give respect to like the process and the plant.
Yeah.
And, you know, like I said, I came from, you know, salt grows and I've, you know, and I know, you know, it's a great way to produce, you know, flower. But, you know, for living soil and seeds, man, they just go hand in hand.
So let's talk about that real quick we didn't talk about it too much.
But yeah, I wanted to just dive
in. I am curious about, so obviously you have the experience in the salt grows.
Yep.
But since you've switched over, I know you're a really big organic guy.
Yeah.
And so I'm just curious, like, what changed for you? And then just tell us a little bit about the plants feeding plants.
Yeah. So what really changed for me, I mean, even before I got into the, you know, industry, so to speak, you know, whenever I landed in Colorado, basically I started growing and I just wanted to grow the healthiest product possible for myself to produce for myself.
Yeah. What does it taste like?
Hey, I'll let you be the judge.
All right. I'm still trying to, what was the second one?
This is the skunk one, the Silk Road skunk.
Silk Road.
Yeah. So okay. This one I would say is,
this is what I have here.
It's some sort of haze and Uncle Fester skunk.
Okay. So
it's from, what is it? God, I can't think of the breeder now. But he did a big project with Uncle Fester skunk, and I looked through a bunch of his stuff.
So this one, and the first thing I got was like kind of some creaminess.
Yeah.
Compared, and maybe it's just compared to the other one.
Compared to the other one, yeah.
But and these look like, these look like old sativa buds.
Yes. Yes.
Cool sativa.
And the plant is huge. It like dumps weight.
Dominating.
Like, yeah, dominating. Domineering.
It just fills the entire room.
Yeah, it's like, okay.
All right, so wait, hold on. Which, it's AG.
Oh, so I think you mix up.
Oh. No, you're right.
I know my ladies.
This is the AG skunk. This one is the
Silk Road.
Silk Road, okay. So that has what in it?
Haze. No, and that's a lot of times, you know, that's the problem. So you look through things that say skunk in the name and thinking they're going to be skunky, and it's like,
it does taste good.
It's good. It's good weed, right? But
not my style, but it's good. What are you smoking on there?
So this is the Silk Road.
Silk Road. Okay, yeah. I just trying that.
I think it's a good daytime.
This one is my favorite.
Me too.
The Afghan.
Yep.
What is it? Afghan.
Afghan Punch.
Afghan Punch. And by the way, the punch has absolutely nothing to do with Purple Punch.
So it's Mendo Breath, Purple Punch, crossed to Peruvian Heirloom.
Okay.
That is Peruvian Punch.
Peruvian Punch. Okay, so that's Mendo Breath and Purple Punch. Gotcha.
Yep. So it's got a little of that purple to it. It's got a little of that flavor, but the Mendo really, like, I think solidifies it as like that more stronger smoke. You know, sometimes Purple Punch does have this lack in, like, you know, the punch quality.
Yeah.
You know, it's got a lot of qualities that are great, but like the actual, you know, strength of it isn't the highest. But that Mendo Breath really adds some strength behind it. And then the Afghan, of course, always, you know, a sedative, you know, cerebral
effect. I wish I could figure out what that other spice is. It's licorice root is definitely spot on.
Yeah, I always like, I describe some of them, you know, depending on the pheno, as like holiday spices, like a mix of like
hot,
holiday,
warm spices.
Yeah, like put in like a cider, you know, like a clove.
Cinnamon, now I understand why you're saying cloves.
Dried oranges or something.
Yeah,
it's pretty good, but mixed together.
It's nice and strong too. I dig on that.
It's one of my favorites. And that one, I just like, I had so much of it. That was one of the jars I just like shoved the weed in there, didn't even try it. I was like, all right, we'll get to it later. But the interesting thing is that, you know, you take the big leaves off and you do some of the, you know, small leaves just in like a trim bin, you throw it in there. And that stuff cured better than the stuff I trimmed all the way, because it's got a little bit of like I feel like it's got a little protection from like that, the crow's feet.
Yeah.
You know, and then when you want to smoke it, you take it, you knock the crow's feet off and you smoke it. It still even has a little bit of bounce to it if you compare it to the ones that, like this, the Silk Road compared to that.
Yeah.
That one's, they're the same age.
So yeah, dude, that is 100% my style. And Jaren, New Millennium Jaren.
Yeah.
He calls it roll cages. But exactly the same thing. I'll leave that on. And that's why Scotty's always teasing me, because I'll sit here.
And you pick it off as you.
Yep. So like, right. Like, you know.
Yeah. And then at the end, you have all this trim.
Well, and then like, here, look. I mean, if you have to, you can smoke this. But I like to just pick that out right at the last minute. And then you have this perfect little, like, uncompressed. And then when you pack it, it burns nice.
And those are the little bits I eat for fiber, you know, get my little day started.
Yeah, exactly, man. Yeah.
Like, that's another reason I grow living soil and do minimal pesticides. Because, like, I was eating the leaves for a little while, juicing the leaves and doing things like
that.
Does that work? For like health benefits, digestion, and like things like that. Like, overall, like, it's like juicing a spinach or, you know, anything else that's green. It's got chlorophyll in it, but you can. If you chew on a couple of cannabis leaves, a lot of you feel like a tingle in your mouth, you know, or a tingle in your throat. Like, a lot of times you would feel like, I feel like it's medicinal. Like, it's
okay.
It's like an antibacterial, like, or something like that.
There's a certain aspect of that where I'm like, why wouldn't I just have some spinach?
Because it's not cannabis.
But maybe it has some medicinal stuff.
Because it's
not cannabis.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because it's like
cannabis. All right, I'm going
to
try that.
Cannabis has so many different, I want to get somebody to help me do a bottled wash project. So like the wash water, like from like a super clean grow, right?
Yeah.
You know, and then take that wash water and bottle it and drink it. Have you ever tried that before? Have you ever tasted it? From like, you know, another reason why,
no.
You know, minimal pesticides, but like I once tasted you know, it was like watermelon juice. That's what it smelled and tasted like. And then I drank it, you know, little by little, but it felt like you were drinking like cough syrup or something like that. Like, you know,
you can feel it like numbing.
Yeah.
Really? That's interesting.
So I bet there's like a host of benefits from that stuff.
So do you think that it's like terpenes, some water soluble?
100% water soluble compounds and like water soluble terpenes and, you know, there's all different.
Now that's something I never hear anybody talking about.
Water soluble
terpenes from cannabis.
No, because that's like you lose.
I'm in the wrong circles, I guess. I never hear anybody talking about
that. I think a lot of times, like, you don't hear about it because like they go out with the wash.
And they just see what you did there.
Yeah. They just throw them out. You know, they're pouring them down the drain. Also, I think they could be like a nutrient derivative. Speaking of plants feeding plants, we used to do that with a lot of the wash waters. Put it in like a finishing flower situation, you know, help with the terpenes or like, but yeah, we were kind of talking about plants feeding plants. I did, you know, I got into living soil, because I really feel like, yeah, I do, you know, living soil practices and no-till practices outdoors as well. I really feel like, I mean, it's easy and it works. That's frankly, and because it's, I wanted to be, you know, I came from a salt environment and like doing what other people wanted me to do. Like you have to grow this way. And it's and you can't scale living soil and you can't do these on a commercial setting. Watch, you know, it's like, let's just watch me or, you know, watch me be successful, you know, doing it and grow fireweed.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. So like now that I get to do what I want to do, you know, I 100% living soil, you know, try to do those things. I really got into, you know, I did water only, you know, and then eventually, you know, there's, you know, with living soil, there's a learning curve, you know, you run into issues, right? You run into nutrient deficiencies or, you know, pH lockouts or things like that. And that kind of took me to like the companies like fermented plant extracts with like the labs and like that kind of, you know, that kind of thing. But it was a little intimidating for me, honestly, like the whole process and like all the different inputs and things like that. And back when I first moved to Denver, I was growing this big giant garden. This lady told me, she's like, you can just throw all your weeds, you know, pull your weeds, throw them in like a trash can, fill it with water, and you can just take that water and feed your plants with it. You wouldn't, you know, we call it, you know, weed tea or whatever. And I found out before I even knew about Jadam or anything like that, I was using that on my plants outside, and it was just, it was working wonders. And then I learned about like the Jadam methodology, and I was like, oh, that's what I used to do. And I kind of like refined, you know, used the, you know, the Jadam methods and I was, you know, I was like, hey, why don't I just, I had a, really what it came down to is I grow a bunch of my own vegetables. And I had a bunch of leftover squash and pumpkins. And I was like, there's got to be something.
What am I going to do with something this? No more squash.
So I looked up and, you know, it looked into making the, you know, the liquid, you know, the fermented plant juice from that. And, you know, and it got me into like, you know, making the microorganism solution, you know, from the potatoes and like learning about that. And I also,
IMOs,
exactly. Indigenous microorganism collection, and proliferation and things like that. And then I also, I live on like 3 acres and I have, you know, running water and, I have, you know, clean well water, but then I also have like a stream in my backyard and I can gather water from and like, and like a lot of different, really clean environment that I feel like it's pretty pristine compared to what's around.
Yeah.
And, I have like, you know, horsetail, you know, bog, you know, full of horsetail, cattails, you know, and I started taking some of those things and making, you know, the solutions from them for myself. And I just post about them or whatever. And I'm like, hey, who would be interested? I have 2 gallons.
Hey man, you want some weird stuff in a jar?
Exactly. I got like 2 extra gallons that I'm not going to use. Yeah. Who's interested? And I got a bunch of interest.
Yeah, yeah.
And I sold all that and I was like, hell, I'll just keep making it. And so I, you know, I just experimented with different things, researched like what, you know, different components had, like pigeon peas, for example, really high in nitrogen. So I was thinking about that one for veg. And you know, when you brew it up and ferment it, it's got amino acids and, all different types of enzymes and all, you know, beneficial compounds for veg. The horsetail is great antimicrobial. It's got silica. You know, the pumpkins have, you know, P and K and, you know, all these different, you know, different components.
Stuff that's just right in your yard anyway.
Yeah, right in my yard anyway.
That's what's so amazing about it all.
And that's like, the beauty. Right there. And that's the beauty of it. And, you know, the key is like having clean, non-chlorinated water. Like when you're doing Jadam and like, you know, making these solutions, like, so I had all this at my disposal and I started, started using it. Yeah. And you know, there's all the, you know, there's a bunch of different things I can start collecting from my own land, you know, that I can use in these mixtures. And then, you know, just finding ways to, you know, boost the, you know, the, NPKs of your soil, frankly, you know, it's like, if you're not, it's hard to, you know, over years and years of doing living soil, It's great for veg. I have tons of nitrogen, but if, you know, eventually, you know, the P and the K I feel like are lacking. Mm-hmm. And I gotta push those a little bit more, you know, and top dressing. It's great, but it takes time for those things to break down and seep down. So, yeah. You know, so the Janab methods really like piqued my interest, like plants feeding plants, like this really makes sense. You know, I would always take my leaves from my plants whenever I defan and put them right back on top and they'd go back into the system, which is great. I still do that. But if you want to add like a boost of, you know, enzymes to help break things down, if you want to add a boost of NPK or whatever, we have individual, you know, ones. And then we also have like, you know, we've made the, or we've combined a couple and done like a all purpose, a veg and a bloom mix for people who don't want to like think, okay, I need to buy these five different bottles and kind of put them all together for you. And then we went out to, we linked with some awesome farmers out of Area 420 that grow organically as well. And when they were throwing away all their stems, all their leaves, all their roots. And there was even a bunch of like discarded buds and stuff like that in there.
Yeah.
They allowed me to come out and take all that stuff and make ferment from it, make these solutions from it. So we have a pure hemp, we call it hemp. It's cannabis, but you know, we're calling hemp for all intents and purposes. And you know, plants feeding plants, that's a great representation. It's like, that's hemp. We're going to be feeding it to hemp, and it goes well in any stage. You know, it's got, you know, silica, it's got, you know, a bunch of different, a multitude of, you know, of vitamins and minerals, amino acids.
Yeah.
You know, it's got what they call, you know, ciliates. In order to make, you know, these solutions, you have to, you know, basically recruit and grab and harness, you know, indigenous microorganisms. And I'm lucky enough to, like I said, live with a, you know, running water, a stream, a pond that have a bunch of different types of microorganisms in there. And ciliates, they basically, like protozoa, for example, you know, they don't get enough credit for, you know, a lot of these, you know, worms and things get a lot of credit for decomposing.
Yeah.
But these things really make the nutrients available to the plants. And that's what we use. And that's what Janab uses to basically break down plants to make the plants, you know, to liquid, make the liquid solution.
Yeah.
So you have, along with like, you know, the chelated nutrients that are readily available, you have these protozoa. You know, some of them don't survive, or, you know, and they can become food, but you have like this living,
it's literally
nutrient.
There. Yeah.
You know, that's got a lot of different components in it, you know, similar to like, a lab's product, but it's more diverse because it doesn't just have one variety of lactobacillus. There's other varieties of lactobacillus, but there's also like, I mean, who knows, you know, that's half the beauty of it, is this, the wide range of microorganisms.
What keeps it, stable?
Stable.
Yeah.
Time and competition. So like eventually something wins, you know, and things balance out. So it's usually like, I'll find that some mixtures are more fungal dominant, some are more bacterial dominant, depending on what the component is. In terms of like getting things tested and like what exactly in there, we're not there yet. This is more of like a hobby project, something we're doing for fun. And because I use it and I see a really big benefit and people are seeing benefits by using it. And eventually we'll get it all, you know, ironed out. But we're just flying by the seat of our pants right now and just having a good time.
Right on. Yeah, you gave me a couple samples.
And yeah.
I'll give them a try. So the general idea of it, though, because I've kind of done that too, switch from to basically water. I don't know if you count tea. But water and tea, like, and maybe like calcium.
Yep.
But I'm just amending soil. I like the Nectar One Shot.
Yeah.
Just because I don't have the room or the time or frankly the inclination to whip up a huge batch of soil and then cook it for 30, 60 days or whatever. Like, I just can't do that. It's not an option for me.
Yeah.
So, pretty decent results with stuff like One Shot or Green Bicycles. I really, really like that stuff. It's just ultra fine, but it's got all the stuff that you would want from, if you were to buy all the down to earth boxes or build the soil, you know what I mean?
Exactly.
It's all so it sounds like just, you know, the, is it FPP? No, FPE.
So the,
fermented
plant. It's a J LF. JLF. Jadam Liquid Fertilizer.
Jadam. Okay. So that's
because the FPP is a KNF product.
It's that weed.
So it's KNF. So you got, and they're not necessarily opposing ideologies. There's two different. You got KNF and you got Jadam, and you know KNF is a little bit. You know, they have their methodology, and Jadam is a. It's like you could do a lot of different. There's a lot, and there's like Jadam wedding agents, and all those different things. It's kind of just
for your different. For your liquid though. I mean, the general idea is that you already have kind of a, let's call it an amended soil if it's not a super soil.
Yeah.
And the idea is to provide some immediate nutrition as well as some life. To help break down the dry stuff that you put in.
Exactly. Yeah. Okay. So it's going to add, it's going to be, enzymes, amino acids, helping to break down whatever's, locked in that soil.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people will use it just as if they have a lockout or a deficiency or like a pH, it helps balance pH.
It's it's like a MicroLife bomb.
Yeah. It works well. I liken it to like the fermented plant extract products, they're really very similar in their help to break down a lot of those things.
Yeah.
And it's just different, different plants, being used. Traditionally a JLF is more nutrient dense.
Okay.
It's got, more NPKs in it.
More meat,
It's been sitting longer, typically.
Yeah.
And it's, ours range in age, but it's a life bomb that's got nutrients too.
Yeah.
And people have asked, can you use it like as a standalone?
Yeah.
And you can. It depends on, in living soil, for example, I've gone years without putting anything but plain water in my soil.
At some point you
got to add something. Yeah. Or if you're if you're in a cocoa medium, you can feed it, every feeding if you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in a living soil setting or a peat moss kind of grow, you don't need to do it all the time because a lot of that stuff holds onto those nutrients and you can really just feed water in between. Or feed this stuff, every third watering or fourth watering or fifth. I've seen people, just water, use it, once or twice a cycle, and see a benefit the next day.
Yeah. I will definitely give it a try. And one of the things that I've always been fascinated by doing it, but and I kind of made a joke about it earlier, but I can't have a whole bunch of jars and fermenting stuff, and it's just more stuff to pay attention to.
You're saying for you to do it yourself?
My house, literally.
Right. Yeah.
So but I'd love to try it. Yeah. So definitely give it a ride. And the other thing I really like to do is I've been building up some raised beds outside for I like to grow hot peppers outside, and those beds, it's just what it costs to go buy really, a lot of soil to fill a couple 4x8 beds.
Oh, yeah.
It's hundreds and hundreds of dollars. So, I'm just making that better every year, and every year it gets a little better. So, man, I'm happy to take some of that stuff and
try it out. Yeah, it's one of those things the gift that keeps on giving. If you're going to be keeping that soil, a lot of these things.
That's what I'm saying. It's going nowhere.
It's going in there,
it's outdoors. It's in raised beds. It's going nowhere.
Whatever will survive, and hopefully just add to the microbiology.
Yeah, yeah. And I already one of the beds I went crazy with. I just loaded it up with garlic this fall. So I can't wait until next, because the last time I grew garlic, I just did, the one thing I didn't have was enough of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I love garlic. I just haven't had a big success growing a lot of it.
I haven't. So the first time I ran it, I had six varieties, and I just had a couple short rows of them. And they came out great, but I didn't clip the scapes.
Oh, so yeah. That's always that.
Fantastic, but small.
Small. That's what I
so
it's like that one garlic clove.
They loved my beds, and they came up no problem. This time I have one local variety. I just got it from a local farm. I bought a 2-pound bag of bulbs.
Nice.
In the fall, and just planted the whole thing. And I did leave some space for hot peppers. But when you say a lot, I don't know if you mean more than a bed full, but I'm hoping that isn't going to cause a problem.
No, not at all. No.
Because they do get pretty tall. And like they'll, you know.
The peppers themselves? Or the,
No. Sorry, the garlic.
The garlic.
Yeah, they just get really tall.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're supposed to clip them. Maybe I got to look more into that.
Yeah, I love to eat the tops.
Yeah. But I'm curious, like anything that's going to, I mean, I guess really what I'm getting at is I will put a few hot pepper plants in there. And so both of those plants are just really rich in, and I don't know if it's terpenes or let's just say biological compounds that I think are really good for you,
yeah.
Particularly.
The capsaicin.
Yeah. And then like garlic, like I'm just a firm believer. Like it's just got a lot of magic in there. There's a reason why like in Asia, like people just eat mad amounts of like ginger, garlic, scallion.
It's so good for you.
Allium. Yeah, exactly.
It kills just that, so much.
Like, whatever it is, the antioxidants, what I don't even know science behind it. Yeah. But anyways, so when we talk about like the fermented, you know, plant, all that kind of stuff, like, I just think like, I don't know, is that enhancing all of that? Because I'm trying to express the terpenes or whatever it is in the garlic and in hot peppers in the same way that we're growing wheat.
It's funny you say that. And that's, you know, you asked me before is like, why, what brought you to living soil? Like, why did you do living soil? It's like, especially for breeding, I feel like, you know, living soil helps the plant to express itself in the most pure way possible.
Yeah.
You know, you're not having like tons of NPKs like shoved at this plant, you know, hammering in, you know, yield. You know, whenever I do pheno hunts, you know, it was, I always tried to do them in living soil because I did see a difference in the plant side by side, you know, if it yielded well and expressed well in living soil, it would crush it in like the traditional, you know, because typically living soil doesn't have, without a little input, doesn't have quite the NPK, especially at the end, you know, but that bring the big giant buds, you know, and that older living soil has better potential to do that. But like making those connections with like the humic fulvic, the microbiology, you know, and the nutrients, it's not so much just about the nutrients. It's like, you know, I could give you, you know, steak after steak after steak after steak. It doesn't mean you're going to start getting muscles all of a sudden.
Yeah.
You got to like work out and you got to like eat the right amount of steak plus some water.
Right.
Take a break. Eat this steak, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to just like shove steak down, you know, and like you
get plugged up and then you can't put any more food in.
Exactly. So that's what a lot of times what happens, you get locked out. People get their nutrient, you know, streamlined.
Gotcha.
You know, their straw gets locked out, you know, it gets calcified, it gets, you know, whatever. So if you can keep the right microbiology there, fungal and bacterial, it helps break those things down, create their own enzymes, create their own humic fulvics, that you know, help the, you know, that's why, you know, they call it a living soil system. It's like, it's not just like NPKs. It's like, things are rising, things are falling, you know, things are being sucked up, things are being given back. It's a whole like living, breathing system. That's like, I really like it for that reason, just like, so it connects me to like the process.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I felt so detached sometimes, like pressing a button on the dosatron, like watching everything. And basically my job is like walking around, making sure this emitter's plugged.
Yeah, totally.
This one's broken. Yep, I got to replace this emitter, and I became a plumber all of a sudden, you know? And it's like,
that's not what you're looking
for.
Yeah,
so that's why I really like the living soil factor.
One thing I'm also really curious about, since you're talking about sort of like the organic nutrients and just that style of growing, is, you know, like when you pump plants full of the NPK, they certainly get bigger.
Right.
But one thing I've always wondered is that extra mass just going into plant matter, or is it really going into generating what I'm going to call medicine?
Terpenes and trichromes. Because it's like, how are you going to have a trichrome without space, right?
Yeah.
It's like, if you're like, you know.
For the longest time, you know, people were driven, for obvious reasons, by, you know, growing weight.
Right.
And so I don't know. I'm more sold on the idea that, you know, if you're going to pump them full of nutrients in general, you will get more weight, but that weight is got more plant mass. And I don't know, for all the people who are running tests on their batches and stuff now, if that's like been proven out to be right or wrong.
But, like cardboard terps.
Well, yeah, like, I just feel like, I guess what I'm saying is like, it's almost like a trade-off to me. Like when you grow with the all organic stuff, I do notice that you don't get as much of a yield. The like buds are not as big as they are if you were to like salt them up and, you know, they're just not.
Yeah.
And I've always wondered if you are still at the end of the day getting the same amount of, well, like medicine, what a combination of all those things, cannabinoids, terpenes, the stuff that you really want versus more like plant matter, which is like fiber that's going to burn.
I agree. I am 100% in agreement with that sentiment. And that's like, that's why I grow living soil. And that's why I try to really like diversify like the lineage and the, you know, the genes, the genetic gene pool, like go, you know, went to Peru, pull from here, pull from here, pull from here, and then start kind of like from the beginning rather than start what we have. It's like kind of rebuild.
Stop worrying about yield.
Rebuild something and make it like more about the terpenes and the effects and like the THCA, THCV, CBD, you know, throw some CBG in there. Find some things that like have some interesting terpenes that like really cure or like really help people, you know, that like, or like ones that I would go to the store and like smoke, it would all smoke and taste the same.
Yeah.
And I think that has a lot to do with like what you're putting into it in, kind of like our food, you know, it's like food grown from the ground. If you've ever had a tomato from your grandma's garden or your own garden or your friend's garden that like, and you have like, this doesn't even taste like a tomato. What is this? It's amazing. You know, compared to the stuff that's in the store, that's been grown with salts in a greenhouse.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. It's you know,
I am also fascinated just because it seems like there's a direct connection. There obviously is between sort of cannabinoid profiles, terpene profiles in weed, and obviously like their taste, and then also like the regions that they come from. And it only makes sense that, you know, those areas have, just like wine, right? It affects kind of whatever it is, that chemistry of that plant, because it has a different source of nutrition, I guess.
And pests and things like that. Cause like a lot of terpenes.
Sunshine.
I recently learned, you know, it's like it's either a sunscreen or a pest repellent.
Yeah.
Typically, you know, so it's like, it's either, you know, in response to, you know, heat, you know, ultraviolet rays or wind, or something's eating it and it's got to find a way to, I feel limonene, I think, is one of those. It's like, if something's eating the roots, it starts to produce more limonene. Or like, Queen of the Sun, when we were at that, Growcast talk, she was talking about some of that stuff. Like, you know, if things are being like attacked versus like not attacked, they actually produce more cannabinoids. It's like repel.
It's a stress.
It's a defense mechanism. Yeah.
Yeah. And it just fascinates me. Like, so if there is a strain that's, let's say, high in limonene, to me, there are definitely people who are like attracted to that.
Right.
It's like their favorite terp, or it makes them feel that has the most effect on them.
Yep.
And I'm just really fascinated because I'm convinced, I don't know how, but all those things are connected.
100%. That's the entourage effect, right? And like, they, you know, they always say like, the nose knows. It's like, if you're going smelling 15 different types of weed, they say like, you should really, when you're buying weed, don't look at the name, don't look at the percentage, smell them. Right.
Because
your nose knows, like, your nose is attracted to those terpenes for a reason. Your body craves those terpenes. And some people are put off by limonene terpenes.
Yeah, that's what fascinates me.
It's just like anything else. Right. It's like
your brain knows what you're short on.
Correct.
I swear.
Yeah. Because you have like, it's like,
that's what's so fascinating.
Cannabis,
man.
CBD, all these things, you know, a lot of components in, you know, in health. And it's all about like maintaining like this even keel, this homeostasis. We're either like up here or down. Yeah. We're either overloaded on something or deficient in something.
And if
we can balance it out, that's when we're able to maintain or like function at our highest level.
Yeah.
And like, everyone's got like different, it's like different compounds that they need.
I find it so interesting that those things also have kind of a geographic tie though.
Yeah.
So ultimately there must be some sort of connection between humans and like where those things come from, where they're in like strong, I don't know.
What's like tropical, you know, fruits, for example, like, you know, are from typical tropical regions. So like, you know, bright terpenes, I would say typically are from like sativa dominant strains, where like, if you look at like, you know, the chocolate strains, like the ones like we just, you know, talked about, like all the different anise and things like that come more from like the Afghan or, you know, areas, you know, that are more, you know, harsh.
So do you think, so at like, this is like really deep, but at some level, do you think that people who are drawn to those have something in their sort of genetic history?
Ooh.
Because humans must have like adapted to or become used to consuming those terpenes.
The question is, right? So would they be of those regions or of every other region but that region? Because do they crave those?
Ah,
do they
crave
those terpenes because they're lacking?
They don't,
or are they familiar?
I don't know, but it it just fascinates me. And you know, like,
I agree.
You know, people are so mixed from different regions, and so it's not really straightforward.
Same thing with food too. It's like some people taste cilantro and it tastes like soap to them.
Yeah,
you know,
and like, that is a genetic thing,
right? Probably. And like that's probably has something to do with region, right? Like where you know, like I don't know. There's no answer, but like food and cannabis, you know, and flavors and wine and alcohol, like they all like have such a deep connection to like human biology. It's cool.
All right, so let's be honest. In Asia,
the whole we're being honest.
The whole connection just for this part.
I'm just kidding.
The whole I just think of it as an Eastern thing, and maybe it's not. But just like the using herbs for medicine, plants for medicine, animal stuff for like medicine purposes, right? Has gone. It's thousands of years.
Yeah.
Right.
It's like that's all they had in the beginning.
Well, right? Like there has to be. OK. And so what I mean is like the plants and the animals have like some sort of compounds in them. I mean, this is how like pharmaceutical research is done in a lot of ways is trying to find like some secret rainforest plant that nobody heard of. And it turns out it like makes you lose weight without. Right. You know. But anyways, those things like cultivating or extracting like chemicals, I guess, compounds from different things on Earth has been around forever.
Right.
And finally, it seems like we're coming back to realizing that cannabis is just one of those plants.
Right.
It just has some stuff that's in it that can benefit you. Right. Yeah. Just like peas and everything else.
Right.
And the other thing that's amazing is like you can probably find something good out of just about everything, even weeds. Like you were saying before, you can throw your weeds in some water and like feed your plants with it.
Yes, exactly.
So all I'm saying is just like, I wish people were more aware of like how connected everything really is.
We are so connected. And you
just don't realize how deeply everything is connected, I don't think.
A quarter of mushrooms, go sit in the woods and you get it.
Yeah, that's true.
It's like we are all connected. And once you see it, you can't unsee it. You all know what I'm talking about. And we are. And the more you like get in and like separate from any psychedelic experience, you're like, whoa, like this is like we're all connected. And like you look at history, you look at food, you look at science, you look at it's like there you can't separate, you know, it's like science and technology or nature and science. They try to separate them like nature and, science and God. You try to separate them. But like really, there's no separating. Like one came from the other. And like once you realize that like it's all connected and one, it's the snake eating its tail. You can't really separate
eating its tail.
Yeah, at this point.
Yeah, totally, man. Yeah. Well, you have a really killer setup, especially to kind of get into all that stuff. You got a lot of like raw materials and some space to do that with.
Some freedoms, an understanding wife.
Yeah.
You know, that puts up with the stinkiness in the garage and like during the wintertime. During the summertime and spring, we do it all outside. But right now it's all in like a little bit warmer area in the garage.
I got a smell complaint the other day.
You did?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It stinks.
Oh, I did too. And you just gotta talk them through it.
It'll be done. But
the understanding, it's been great. So,
but yeah, man, I appreciate all the stuff that you do and coming out to the events. I love hanging out and I really appreciate you taking some time to come by the studio.
Yeah, for sure.
I think you mentioned we might have a few packs.
Oh, yeah, folks. We got a bunch.
We can figure out how to give those away really quick. Just give us just a couple things that people can get excited about or what can we get people excited about to kind of intro you
right now? What I'm, obviously, all the genetics that we've made, are available. The things I'm most excited about right now are the testers. I'm always excited about the testers because it's the newest stuff coming out, most exciting stuff. The Zeta Sage 82 Skunk male, is the male.
Okay.
Here's a few I just kind of got a handful. Aliens, these are all crossed with the Zeta Sage 82 Skunk. Alien Sour Apple, Raunchy Runts. Oreos, Garlic Gas from Brainstrap Genetics. I think you've met Matt from Brainstrap.
Yep.
Pinkleberry F6, one of the most purple strains I've ever worked with in my life. Ice Cream Cake, Taste the Rainbow. That's an unreleased strain from us. Kentucky Red Hair Skunk. that roadkill skunk from Blue Sky Vienna that we were talking about.
Okay.
Bigfoot stick that we were talking about, and Gorilla Glue number 4.
All right.
All those are, you know, going to be, we're going to get as many testers out as we can, get as much feedback
as we can. We will help get them around, man.
And some of the newer stuff, the Freakin' Sweet collaboration, or this is a collaboration with Covert Genetics, GMO BX1 crossed a Freakin' Sweet. The Freakin' Sweet, I think I was telling you about, was a freak show cross that same Afghan punch.
Okay.
So we're looking for that morphology in the freak show, bringing some interesting, you know, just look at.
Yeah. Is there, are there some like terp profiles that you are like hot on these days?
So
I'm always trying to get, people ask me, they're like, man, what should I get?
So this, the Ancient Aliens that we did is Mach 1 cross to Afghan punch. Crossed to Afghan, and it's we made a line off of that, and that one is gassy, it's skunky. Yeah, that's a really interesting. I mean, all the Afghan punch stuff is really interesting. If you like, you know, like if you're looking for more like musty, skunky stuff, the Ancient Aliens is good. The Taste the Rainbow, we just keep getting reports of like Skittles, bag of Skittles. This tastes like candy. You really like sweet terps
for the sweet stuff.
Taste the Rainbow. That's your bag.
I will be honest. This is unique. I can't think of any other weed that smells like that I've come across. So it has a really unique thing. And like at first, and I think it's because it's unique that like, You smell it and you don't quite know what it is. And then you're like, okay. And then I find myself wanting to go back.
Yes.
And I'm like, man, that's kind of good. And then it's strong. And like I said, it's got a really interesting kind of aftertaste that I'm digging on. It's Jägermeister is kind of a good way.
I think
it's like those sort of rich, deep herbs.
Plummy.
Just a richer, deeper. It's not bright. But it's not dank and like rotten or anything. It's just deep and rich.
Yeah.
So anyways, this is a really nice treat, man. I really appreciate you bringing these up.
Oh, yeah.
Tell everybody where they can find you.
So heartandsoilproject.com is the website. Heartandsoilseeds.com as well. Little trick on the website, stickers equals seeds. So just know that. We sell stickers. Okay. We sell CBD products. And all of our stickers come with a free pack of seeds.
Oh, sweet.
So that's in other offerings. On the main page, you'll find hemp clothes. We do hemp shirts and hats. We do nutrients. You can find that in the nutrients page. And then other offerings is where you can find all of our seeds.
Okay.
Right now, we're good to go on Instagram. They constantly like to shut us down. We hit 12,000 followers and our account's gone forever. But we're building back. So at Heart and Soil Seeds is the Instagram right now. My email is banderson@heartandsoilproject.com. That's like the most consistent way to get a hold of me besides.
You seem like the kind of guy that answers all your emails.
I answer all my emails, all my texts. I'm really good about getting back to you as quickly as I can, unless I'm on the show with these guys.
You have a queue of messages waiting for
you. Hopefully I do. Discord. Discord is the new community space.
For
Heart and Soil. We don't get shut down. We have all kinds of different channels you could post in, get information on our strains, collaborate with other like-minded people. We do a Sunday sesh every Sunday. We get on there for like an hour or two, chat about whatever the current topic we want to chat about is. Smoke some weed, answer some questions, have a good time. People are a little bit more apt to, you know, come out of their shell in a place like that rather than like on Instagram.
Space.
More of a safe space. It is exactly. And the Heart and Soil, you know, community really is more of a safe space less people are the more people are there for the right reasons. And it's like more of like a self-policing kind of place. People start picking on each other. It doesn't last very long, which we haven't had a problem with because I feel like the community as a whole that it's kind of like your group. It's like, you know, the Growcast group, you know, that's why we all get along. It's like, you know, you can tell when someone's come from, I got sent by Growcast. You're like, yeah, I can tell you're going to be a decent human being most of the time because.
Yes. So for most important thing is if you're somewhat local, come on out to one of the events and yep, hang out. Yeah, so it's a good time.
Get with myself or Shane from Taking Tops Cannabis. He's a big community organizer. He's helping to get he's spearheading a lot of these GrowCast group meetups. They've been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Make sure you let us know. I know you guys post on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, make sure you let me know about if you guys have like an event going. I got to bug Adam too.
Yeah,
I know he's got that new studio.
He does. Yeah, I've been over there a few times, and that yeah, that's I was just over there a couple of days ago. Got him, 50 packs of seeds to get out to his Patreon group.
I'm waiting for the we usually have like a warm up at the end of the month in January where you get like a couple of days like 60 or something. So I have these dreams of like just having a hangout. Yeah. One of those days, but it's all snow, man.
Yeah, I'm in for whenever you guys want to do something.
Cool.
It's not too much of a drive.
Alrighty. Well, thank you again for coming by, man. I really appreciate you. Good time.
Yeah.
And we'll see you around soon.
Yeah, sounds great.
All right, man.
All right. Peace.
Take it easy. Thanks for joining, everybody. See you next time.
Some people love to blaze up the tank. Yeah, we get happy for noon. And when the boss man says to take a little break.